Good morning. It's 7:33. I'm Beneduccio in Morgantown. With a little more than a week left in the regular session, the chambers are now focused only on bills that were approved across the rotunda. But does that mean the drama that we saw on the House floor will also drift over to the Senate? Ashton Mara discussed those hot-button bills with members of the upper chamber and has this report.
Bills that were hotly debated in the House are expected to receive just as much attention in the Senate as members of the legislature near their final week of the session. One of those includes House Bill 4411. The bill allows commercial solid waste authorities to dispose of solid waste and drill cuttings from the Marcellus shale industry and makes its first stop in the Senate in the Committee on Government Organization. Senator Herb Snyder chairs that committee and says he believes disposing of drill cuttings in landfills is a much safer practice than allowing companies to bury the waste on site. The problem, Snyder says, is the time limit in the House bill, allowing sites to collect an unlimited amount of tonnage of waste, but only for 2 years.
Because these landfills are making significant multi-million dollar investments to put these additional monofill cells in for the drilling waste only, as it will be required. That the problem is, if they're going to put that kind of money into being part of the system for solid waste and dealing with the drilling waste, they don't want to have it all in 2 years. And then we're back here, legislature trying to decide what to do in 2 years. We know if we did that, we're setting up a problem that's going to hit us between the eyes in 2 years, so why not settle it now?
Delegates spent hours debating another bill over the past few weeks, one that regulates a state constitutional office. House Bill 4490 is known as the Attorney General Ethics and Accountability Act. Attorney General Patrick Morrissey says the bill limits his powers to protect West Virginians as consumers and their Second Amendment rights. Senate Minority Leader Mike Hall says he believes the bill stems from Morrissey's policy of cutting down on the use of outside counsel and major law firms in Charleston losing out on the state funds.
I think a part of this is just it's just a partisan political battle that's kind of worked its way into a policy question. And I think what we have to do is decide, is this policy right or not? And at this point, I don't think it is. I don't think they should be doing that to the office.
Another bill Hall says the Republican caucus is watching closely in the Senate is House Bill 4588, the Pain Capable Unborn Child Protection Bill. As it came out of the House, the bill restricts abortions to before 20 weeks with some emergency medical exceptions for the mother. It's referenced first to Senate Health, where committee chair Senator Ron Stallings expects to see some changes. But Hall says he agrees with the science that a fetus at that age can feel pain, and the bill comes down to protecting the value of life.
It goes back to the concept of personhood. You know, all the way back to our founding document about the right of life. And if you define an unborn child as life, and that gets disputed. If you listen to debates on the floors from time to time, there's resistance to calling an unborn child a child. The term fetus, whatever, but all the definitions of life are there. The classic definitions of life are there. You don't need a religious book to prove that. So that we are defending basically a proposition that we've held sacred for over, you know, our entire history. And this is just an expression of it.
Similar legislation in the past has easily been approved by the upper chamber, but died in the House. Snyder says it's interesting to see the flip this year, but says since he joined the Senate in 1997, he has always voted pro-choice and intends to participate in the conversation surrounding this bill.
Quite frankly, I think abortion is an horrendous practice in any situation. Certainly unheard of after 20 weeks of gestation. My personal choice, even though I'm pro-choice, my personal choice has been life. I have 6 children, so I practice pro-life in my own life. But again, when you get into medical emergencies or the baby in some way has either died or deformed beyond repair and so forth within the womb, it opens up. It's a very emotional debate, but we do need to look at the medical side of this too.
While Snyder and Hall may be on opposing sides of the abortion bill, both agreed on some Senate bills they think will see major changes in the House. The senators expect delegates to rework the pseudoephedrine bill, a bill allowing some elected county officials pay raises, and the legislation relating to municipal gun ordinances. For West Virginia Public Radio, I'm Ashton Mara in Charleston.
As the legislature closes in the final days of the session, delegates were hard at work as the House Judiciary Committee met for 3 hours before yesterday's floor session. As Aaron Payne reports, the committee looked at a Senate bill that would alleviate prisoner costs to counties.
Among the seven bills discussed by the House Judiciary Committee was Senate Bill 307, authorizing community correction programs to operate pretrial release programs. Those programs could range from work release to decreasing the cost of an issued bond. The purpose of the program is to decrease the cost of counties having to hold these people in jails. Pilot programs have been implemented in a few counties, such as Ohio and Wood. Those programs would be voluntary for each county and would allow the release of persons without bond in certain circumstances. It would also implement extra monitoring on those released on bond. Some delegates were curious as to how the program would work without bonds and asked questions of bondsman Phil Real. He says he doesn't have a problem with not issuing a full bond, but did have a concern about not issuing any bond at all.
There are some areas in which you ought to observe some concern, which would be that if you are releasing somebody either on a pre- or post-trial release under conditions and terms established by this council, which would set forth whether it's going to be a work program or drug therapy or whatever it might be, that one of the conditions be that they have at least some minimal bail.
One of the sponsors of the bill, Senator Donald Cookman, attended the House Judiciary meeting to field questions. Delegate John Ellum asked what the circumstances for someone to be eligible for the program were because, as he explained, that in his home county of Wood, the pilot program was not finding many candidates.
It would be for nonviolent offenders, basically. And my great interest in it is in going around the various counties, and even when I was judge and prosecuting attorney before that, every county that I ever talked to, when I asked them about what their main concern was, and that was jail expenses. And this is just another thing that would help, in my opinion, to reduce the jail expenses that each county has to incur.
After further explanation of the bill, Delegate Misha Poor determined the pretrial programs could possibly bolster the current system in place.
So this is really tightening up, to some extent, our bond process now, to require them to pay the fee that they currently have to pay to the court. And then there's additional step of having to report to that person and even give more additional money to the counties if they meet that requirement.
I think so. And it's still, the bottom line is still up to the judge as to whether or not this, the magistrate or the circuit judge, as to whether or not this would be applied or not.
The committee approved the bill to be reported to the floor with the recommendation that it do pass. For West Virginia Public Radio, I'm Aaron Payne in Charleston.
This is West Virginia Morning at 7:41. College students are not part of the group that most would think about needing help from a food pantry. But as Clark Davis reports, Marshall University officials say the need is definitely there for that little extra support for students to get by and are doing something about it.
Marshall University and the Huntington Area Food Bank have teamed up to develop a food pantry on campus for students. The idea for the pantry began 2 years ago, according to Food Bank Executive Director Tiffany Tatum.
A lot of people don't think of students as a part of the community that needs access to food resources, but really, they truly are. There are a lot of non-traditional students. Not every student is 18 years old and lives at home or can take advantage of the meal plan. A lot of times they have families or they have no family to help them.
Tatum says those are among the circumstances that made it seem necessary to provide an outlet for college students to supplement their ability to obtain food with a pantry.
Because of crazy school schedules, they can't always sustain a full-time job even if they wanted to. And so the food pantry is going to make resources available to them. They're going to have non-perishable items, so if they have to stop by in between classes, they can grab some food, stick it in their car, go to class, and then know that they're going to have some nourishment when they get out of class.
Marshall isn't the first college in the area to provide its students with a pantry. West Virginia State has a pantry that will be 1 year old in March, and West Virginia University has a pantry that opened in the fall of 2010. Tatum says Marshall and the food bank carefully studied how others in the state and region were operated.
A lot of schools limit it to just students. Some are open to the community. This, I believe, is going to be a hybrid. It's going to be open to students, to faculty. They'll be taking advantage of the USDA commodity program, which is open to the community.
The pantry is open from 10 in the morning to 4 in the afternoon, Tuesdays and Fridays. In order to obtain food, students need their ID and have to sign in. Elizabeth Appel Sheets is the director of the pantry, which is located in the Memorial Student Center on campus.
There's guidelines. It is for students. If a faculty staff person comes to see us and they are in need, of course we are going to assist them. There is a means test per the food bank guidelines that we have to present to people, to the students, and ask that they fall within these guidelines. And it's just going to be an honor system. We're not going to ask them to produce W-2s or paycheck stubs or anything like that, but just to attest that they do fall within these guidelines.
Sheets says she's sure that most will fall within the guidelines. She says they just don't want to be in a position where they see students going hungry.
The last thing you want to hear of is anyone going without food. And we work with students on a daily basis, and we see the need of some students who struggle to pay tuition, pay the rent, pay the utilities. And it seems like the food is at the very end of the list when it comes to prioritizing. And we just don't want anyone to go without food.
Donations of both non-perishable food and money for the pantry are welcome. For West Virginia Public Radio, I'm Clark Davis in Huntington.
Mary Chapin Carpenter and Sean Colvin perform That Don't Worry Me Now on this Mountain Stage Song of the Week.
Before you knew me, an angel came to me, and I wrestled him down to the ground. And he said he could cure me. I said, but don't worry me now, 'cause those angels just bore me the same old damn story. They were lost, oh, but now they've been found. There ain't nobody looking, but don't worry me now. 'Cause I live by the sound of devils in flight, and I travel alone in the cold, in the dead of the deep dark. And so if Jesus is coming, he better start running. And I don't really think he'd be proud. And I won't get to heaven, but don't worry me now. Sing me to my rest. I'll never get used to that sound. Just give me Sam Cooke singing, but don't worry me now. But don't worry me now. But don't worry me now.
Mary Chapin Carpenter and Sean Colvin with That Don't Worry Me Now. You can hear this song and more music on Mountain Stage, Sunday afternoon at 2 on West Virginia Public Radio. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. Support for West Virginia Public Broadcasting's news bureaus comes from Shepherd University, West Virginia University, Marshall University, and Concord University. West Virginia Morning is produced with the assistance of Cecilia Mason, Suzanne Higgins, Clark Davis, Jessica Lilly, Glennis Board, Dave Mistich, and Ashton Mara. Our news director is Beth Voorhees. Our director is Bob Powell. From Morgantown, I'm Beneduccio. Good morning.